Hi, you are listening to a free Majority Report. If you would like to become a member, please go to majority.fm.
Yes, Amy.
Oh, my name's Janine Garofalo. How are you?
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, April 26, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday, folks. And man, what a week. With us, as always, hopefully, will be Cliff Schechter. Casual Friday, casual Cliff Schechter Day, as we like to call it around the office. Also on the program today, Isabel Gillies will be joining us live in studio. If you're one of those people who listen to the program live, you can also watch the program live at majority.fm, and we are going to endeavor to widen the camera so that both Isabel and myself will be within view. On the program today, with Cliff Schechter, we'll be talking about the implications of those senators who voted against gun reform. Implications, I should say, for those senators. Also on the program today, we will be talking about the sequester, it is enraging to me. The Senate last night, in the dead of the night, literally in the dead of the night, passed a fix for the sequester, not for Head Start, not for the NIH, not for those schools that have had to cut 30% of their teachers because they rely on federal funds. Maybe they're on a military base. Maybe they're on an Indian reservation. But rather, to allow the FAA to avoid furloughing some air traffic controllers and shutting down some small regional airports. Because, of course, this is all the media and the wealthy are terribly concerned about. We will get into that with Cliff. I mean, this should not... I'm going to try and really contain myself here. This is just a horrible move by the Senate. The administration has given every indication it's not going to veto this bill. Thereby completely, as far as I can tell, because, of course, the sequester has hit a lot of poor people at this point. The sequester has hit a lot of middle-class people in terms of their schools. The sequester has hit a range of functions of the federal government. Yet it is only that which directly implicates the wealthy that we're going to see any fix for, and therefore it completely defangs the sequester as a tool in which to force, I guess, the Republicans to accept tax increases, if that was the plan. So we will talk more about this. Before we do, we should mention that yesterday the U.S. government has announced, or I guess has released a statement, that Syria has probably used chemical weapons against rebel forces on a small scale. but emphasized that intelligence services were still not 100% sure. Look, we don't know how forthcoming the U.S. government is being in this instance. We know that the Cameron government in Britain has backed the U.S. assessment, saying that there was growing evidence of the use of chemical weapons. We also know that in the past, President Obama has said the use of chemical weapons is essentially crossing a bright line, a red line, And presumably that red line was, if you cross that red line, we're going to involve ourselves militarily, which I think is why the U.S. government, we can see the U.S. government's reluctance to get involved in this conflict by the fact that Hagel gets out there and says that it's on a small scale, likely. There's all sorts of qualifiers for this. So, meanwhile, UN leader Ban Ki-moon has renewed a call for Syria to let inspectors into the country. I don't think that's going to happen.
That's pretty unlikely.
That's pretty unlikely, says Michael. Just to emphasize the fact that I said that I don't think that's going to happen.
Oh,
I too don't think that's going to happen.
There you go. So, you know, it's just a question. This is going to be something that we got to monitor in the future because, well, I mean, in all seriousness, you know, this is the – we're starting to see the road now, right? I mean, we're starting to see the sort of the road in which will potentially lead to U.S. involvement here. There certainly has been calls for this by the warmonger sect in the Senate. I think you know who you are, John McCain and Lindsey Graham. And also, yesterday, of course, was the George Bush revisionist holiday that we are now celebrating in this country, I guess. And aside from, I mean, I really couldn't watch any of the festivities yesterday. It was too sickening. But yesterday on the program, which was members only, incidentally, folks, and if you want access to that program, it's very easy for you to get access to it. Simply sign up as a member, and you will have access to all of the archived materials that are available for members. We should say that part of the ability to whitewash George Bush's record, and not coincidentally, or perhaps it was coincidentally, on Wednesday, there was a story in the Times of the deteriorating situation in Iraq, which was, by all accounts, I think, predictable. I mean, I actually think you could go back to Steve Gillard's news blog. And Steve Gillard passed away now. Gosh, 4 or 5 years ago. But at the time, back in 2003, 2004, 2005, he was saying, we know where this is going to end up. It's going to end up in an increase to the civil war. It's going to enhance Iran's influence in Iraq. And we are seeing that that sort of burgeoning civil war continues to fester. On Wednesday, Iraqi soldiers opened fire from helicopters on Sunni gunmen hiding in a northern village on Wednesday. The air attack was among clashes throughout the country between forces of the Shiite-dominated Iraqi government and the Sunni gunmen that left at least 27 people dead, dozens wounded. The Sunni tribesmen were continuing to fight a fight that began on Tuesday after the Iraqi army stormed a Sunni protest encampment in the village of Hawaja, leaving dozens dead and injured. Several others were killed on Wednesday in explosions, including the detonation of a car bomb at a public market in the evening in a Shiite neighborhood north of Baghdad. The Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki is now sort of hinting at the idea that this whole notion of shared government with the Sunni and Shiite, that may not be working out so well. So we may want to go to a more Shiite dominated government. Maliki made no public comments on the situation Wednesday, but on Tuesday, after being pressed by American officials in the United Nations, he said he would open an investigation into the events in Hawija and promised to hold military officers accountable for any mistakes. So when we think about George Bush's legacy, we should know that it's still, we still can't write it, as he said. History. History is going to write this up. Hopefully it'll be way, way, way far away from now. So there it is, a part of George Bush's legacy, folks, which, of course, we didn't hear anything about. Now, do we have a clip of Fox and Friends or The Five or whoever it is that was complaining about President Obama raising immigration?
Oh, let me get that.
All right. Well, we got to take a break. When we come back, hopefully we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is Mr. Cliff Schechter on a casual Friday. But of course, before we get to Cliff Schechter, let's play the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Cliff Schechter, you're there. How are you, Cliff?
I'm doing well.
Oh, good. Hold on. Let's try that one more time. You're there, Cliff. How are you?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Then I'm doing well, if you can hear me right now.
Yeah, of course. You sound like you might have a little bit of a cold, Cliff.
Oh, it's not that. I'm just exhausted, Sammy. I just flew in about an hour ago after our fun little event yesterday in Washington. It can tire you out.
Well, I can imagine, and I appreciate your joining us, even though you're at peak exhaustion. So, all right, let's start. I have an inkling as to what this event was. Why don't you tell us about it, and let's talk about the implications of the gun safety votes that were taken last week.
Sure. Well, this event was related to that. A group of us, which included Credo, Move On, Occupy the NRA, Every Child Matters, and others, we came to the conclusion that after what occurred, that people need to start being held accountable for what's going on in Washington. I know that's a novel idea. The legislators are getting called out as they should get called out, and they will continually get called out, like, forever. And so does that clown buffet known as the NRA. Wayne LaPierre and the gang of thieves. But there are people that sort of slide around the shadows and do their dirty work, and nobody ever says their names out loud and says who they are. And we decided that there's no accountability for them. And, of course, in this case, there's others. But in this particular case, we're talking about the lobbyists for the NRA.
And
so we held an event in McPherson Square in Washington, D.C., in the park, where a number of us got up and spoke. And we had some pretty cool signs, and sadly we had the mother of a 16-year-old who was gunned down in a drive-by shooting in Washington to call out the lobbyists for the NRA and make sure everybody knows who they are and what they're doing, and how essentially for their 30 pieces of silver they're more than willing to go and allow your kids to get killed. And we started off doing that. And then we ended up marching on each of their headquarters, the ones that were on K Street. So this would be the C2 Group, Prime Policy Group, Crossroads, Forbes, Tate, Greenberg, Traurig. Who am I missing? Shockey, Schofield, and friends.
Now these are all on K Street. Now these lobbyists, they'll work on both sides of the aisle. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these lobbyists actually, you know, a lot of these lobbyists who work at these places are Democrats, or theoretically they're Democrats. And so, you know where the overwhelming feelings are on this issue in the Democratic Party. And these guys get to go about their business and make their money, their blood money, and then they still get to go to their nice little cocktail parties at night when nobody knows exactly what they're doing during the day. Who they're lobbying for. They also have other groups they lobby for, which we made sure to make some signs making these companies aware, companies and organizations that probably wouldn't be down with knowing that their lobbyist is also an NRA lobbyist. And we're going to be doing a further action next week where we're going to be tweeting at them and calling them and making sure they know these other folks. This includes people like Amazon and Google and Allstate, as well as people you wouldn't expect would hire a lobbyist at the NRA would hire, Cedars-Sinai Hospital, the American Psychological Association, which came out in favor of all of the gun legislation, in turn including the assault weapons ban, as well as and the magazine limit. And so we just think that they should know how we all feel about the fact that they're willing to employ these people that are willing to get our kids killed for money.
So essentially, in some respects, this action is not. I mean, it follows the same theory as almost the Dump Rush program, where it's basically like you are supporting the actions. A firm that is taking your money is also taking money from the NRA, and you are necessarily tied into this group if you're going to use these lobbyists.
That's right. I mean, it's a similar idea, and. The NRA, we've already done this with some of the NRA's corporate partners, and a number of them have pulled out. Wine companies, others that had wine tastings with NRA members, very sexy stuff. And some of the ones, the big hedge fund Cerberus decided they were I don't even know if they've gotten through the process of selling their NRA shares, but they didn't want to own any NRA, gun manufacturer companies anymore, shares in these companies. I mean,
Cerberus, we should say the background on that story is sort of fascinating because it turns out the head of that huge fund, his father-in-law lived in Newtown. Is that right? Or something like that?
I think that's correct, yeah.
And
I think you're correct about that.
And in the wake of that shooting at Sandy Hook, they came out. And of course, you know, I forgive me for being cynical, folks, but I imagine that had the father-in-law lived in Darien, this may not have been an issue. But
No, you're right. I mean, it may not have been. You know, and maybe there is pressure on them because of it. But another thing, I mean, look, there's something that just came out the other day, and, you know, we're working on some of these things. General Electric has now pulled money. They're not financing gun purchases because of what happened. So GE Capital Finance, you know, who provide consumer financing for new gun shop customers, is not doing that anymore. It's not going to affect a huge number of retailers. But the point is that – you know, whether it's retailers pulling assault weapons from their shelves, whether it's these guys who are invested in the gun companies pulling their money out, whether it's corporate partners of the NRA moving away, whether it's lobbyists who do this stuff, who lobby for them. These are all people that enable the National Rifle Association and their sick right-wing militia-enabling agenda. And we're going to make sure that people know who they are. I mean, they're going to have to stand up and explain why it is. Why, how much that money is worth to them and why they're willing to prop up the NRA. So this was the first of many actions to come.
Well, we
and
have
luckily. Go ahead.
We have a link at majority.fm to the pictures of what was happening at that action, including the picture of you speaking. Were you down there in? You're still affiliated with Mayors Against Illegal Guns, or?
No, I was doing this on my own. Okay. I got together with the groups to help them organize and do press for this.
Okay.
So this was not this is not connected to Mayors Against Illegal Guns. Mayors Against Illegal Guns concentrates on legislation and legislators, and this is obviously some moves in other directions beyond that, and I wanted to be involved in some things they're not doing. So this was me.
Let's talk about the moves against legislatures. And you know, there was a piece midweek. Well, I should say a poll that came out by Pew that purports to show that while there is wide support for gun safety laws, we're talking, and by wide, I'm talking virtually unparalleled. In any other issue. I mean, we're talking 90% of the public who supports expanded background checks. Similar numbers even for NRA members. The Pew poll purports to show that there is more intensity amongst those who are afraid of gun safety legislation, let's say, than those who support it. Give me your thoughts on that. I've seen other places where other polls have contradicted that, but at the very least, it certainly, and we spoke about this, I think, last week, there is certainly that perception anyways, and sometimes that's more important than the reality in terms of dictating where a legislator is going to vote when coupled with significant funding to support that vote.
That's correct. And let's be clear. It is a perception issue, and that's a problem. And more recently, and I think it was a reality 10 years ago. It's no longer a reality. I saw that Pew poll, and I've seen others that contradict what that says. So I'm not one of these guys on the right who claims any poll they don't like is necessarily false, but I'm just saying I've seen others that contradict it, and so I would need more evidence, and I guess I can only speak anecdotally that there's so many people involved now in this issue. I mean, the progressive groups, Public Campaign, and Credo, and Move On, all these groups that were with us the other day speaking, you know, they weren't engaged, not to their saying negative about them. This just wasn't an issue that really was on most progressives' radar. They were not engaged in this issue in the past, and so many progressive groups are, and now it's become something where this is almost becoming like a litmus test. If you don't support background checks, you're going to have a lot of trouble in a Democratic primary.
And there was the same, you know, simultaneously, the Washington Post ABC News poll said that just under a third said they could not vote for a candidate who disagreed with them on guns, even if they agreed on other issues. The number is exactly the same in gun households and in non-gun households, which suggests that the intensity is matched on both sides.
That's what I'm saying, Sam. Look, again, people can think I'm spinning. They can think whatever. I can only tell you my honest, you know, as an analyst, being objective about it. Again, I've seen this for years and working on this, and I've never seen anything like. And I'm not just talking about December and January, right after Newtown. Again. You know, there's just we're not in the same space. We're not the people who came out to the march yesterday and said they had never been politically active before, and they're looking. The friends of mine who contact me who aren't even Democrats or anything, just aren't politically active, who are like, what can I do? Hell, I've got friends who are sort of Republican financial types who are doing the same. I think that again, it's a lot harder than these guys would wish it to be to get the image of 26-year-olds being slaughtered out of people's heads. And knowing that whatever we do, any one gun control measure doesn't necessarily prevent any one massacre, but that's some stupid, you know, test that the right made up, because I don't know that we do that with anything else besides guns.
Right.
I don't know that we should do it with every law. Well, when we passed laws saying you couldn't hit somebody, you know, you couldn't kill somebody, I guess that was supposed to have stopped 100% of murders, and somehow it didn't do it. So we might as well scrap those laws. I mean, Stephen Colbert handled that brilliantly. I don't know if you saw that segment with one of these gun nuts, who was the head of one of these organizations in Virginia, when he got the guy all twisted up because when the guy said, well, it won't stop everything, so we shouldn't do it. So he's like, so you mean we should get rid of all laws against crack cocaine because it doesn't stop 100%? And the guy's like, well, maybe not. And then, of course, the gig was up. I just would say there's a lot more intensity. I've seen it. I've seen it in many other polls. It would be like during the election last year, if you believed Gallup, the whole time Romney'd be president right now.
Right.
And I'm not trying to say compare Pew completely to that, but I just don't think that's accurate from everything else that I've seen. There's a lot of intensity, and sadly, some of the intensity is because of the mass coverage of this and how insane that vote was and everything, but some of it's because really just every day more and more people are coming into contact with this. They were hoping this would just be an urban problem, and it's just not. More and more people are knowing people that have been negatively affected, have been hurt, have been killed, because this is spread out to the suburbs and the exurbs and places, and they can't contain this in the cities, and that's where these guys eventually are going to lose, because when you know people who've been harmed or killed because of our lax gun laws, it changes you inevitably.
And this is, I'll tell you, this is what is sort of, I don't even know if you've seen this, Quinnipiac poll released today. Pat Toomey versus
versus Kelly Iota. That's such an important poll.
Yeah, yes. This is Toomey now has the highest approval rating of his entire Senate term. He's of course a Republican from Pennsylvania. In 1 month, his approval rating spiked from 43% to 48%. Meanwhile, Kelly Iota, who of course was one of the legislature's Toomey, we should say, co-sponsored the gun safety legislation that would have expanded background checks, as you know, sort of watered down as it was, would have at least moved the ball forward somewhat. Iota opposed this, and Iota's approval rating dropped by 15 points, according to the Public Policy Polling Survey. She had won her initial Senate race by 23 points in 2010, and now it's according to this poll, she would lose a re-election fight against the Democratic governor Maggie Hansen if the election were held today. So there's at least some indication, and you know, it's tough to directly measure the causality of this, but there's some indication, and again, it may be just a correlation. When you're talking about perception being the buzzword of the day, this is important in terms of this fight. Now, so what
right.
is
and what's important here? And I won't say that I know that it's 100% due to their positions on guns. I have to think that's one of the biggest things that's happened recently, and that plays a big role in it. But I think the best thing about the fact that they chose those two is because those two are very comparable. Those two are conservatives that were elected in sort of center-left states that Democrats win for president in the wave of 2010, where really during most other election times, had they been up against somebody tough, they probably wouldn't have prevailed because they're too conservative for the states they're sitting in. And Pat Toomey did one thing and Kelly Iota did something else. And, I mean, so I think in that way – you know, these are people that have to, if they want to win re-election, are going to have to do that with a Democrat at the top of the ticket in 2016, who will likely carry their states. They're going to have to go against that trend. And that's why it's a pretty, pretty big deal.
So give me a sense of what is the, I mean, I presume that there is at least some type of long-term strategy here, right? I mean, there's no perception that this we're going to see any legislation, certainly not in the next year and a half before the 2014 election, is there? I mean, so this is a long-term project now.
I think so. I mean, look, there was an article in the New York Times today that said that Manchin and Toomey were still working on it in the hope that some of the things like we've just talked about and seeing some of the polling results and some of the, you know, we don't know 100% what got Max Baucus to drop out, but right away, Mayors Against Legal Guns started hitting him with ads across his state and making it clear they were going to spend money against him. And he was used to having relatively easy re-elections, and maybe he didn't want to deal with that. I think that some of the fallout, which I don't see why these guys couldn't predict from watching some of the things that have happened in Chicago and other places in the race that was there. But they apparently they're not smart enough to realize that. And there's talk that Mayors Against Legal Guns might spend over the next couple of months ads hitting Mark Pryor in Arkansas. So, I mean, the talk is that maybe they loosen things a little bit so that people who live very far away in rural areas, maybe they could bring in Mark Begich or Lisa Murkowski. I don't know. There is talk about that. And then the other one that still perplexes me, which was the gun trafficking bill that somehow only got 58 votes, about maybe Kelly Ayotte joining them on that. I mean, my guess is she's going to want to join in something. So I won't say that they definitely won't come up again, because both those bills do have a shot at getting to 60 because of what's going on. But, you know, I would guess less likely than more likely, right? And then the long-term strategy is exactly what we're talking about here. I mean, if you've seen it, if you've seen the sort of the large amount of advertisements, whether they be in newspapers, whether they're, you know, whether the articles that have been written, the video that Occupy put out slamming Heidi Heitkamp that you may have seen. I mean, this just isn't going away, you know, and it's going to be constant, and it's going to target them through 2014. And if they think it's going away, they're just fooling themselves, because there's a lot of people, some of them have stepped forward, Ken Lehrer, you know, and Bill Daley and other people who said they won't give any funds to anyone who is who voted wrong on this on the Democratic side. And then there's pressure on the Republican side again on some of these people that are going to need to win, particularly the ones in 2016, against the tide of a Democratic presidential candidate.
When Bill Daley is the one who is mad about a vote that goes in this way, you know you've got a problem. I mean, this is the guy who basically still walks around saying, like, I really am disappointed in Al Gore for putting up such a fight over that 2000 election.
Exactly. I mean, that to me is the point, right? When you have the same week, essentially, Bill Daley of the establishment corporate Democrats, literally like maybe the charter member almost just behind, right, like Bob Rubin, you know, writing so that he's disappointed, that he wants his money back, that he's not going to support Heidi Heitkamp. And in that same couple days, Occupy the NRA, right, puts out a video showing when Heidi Heitkamp claimed that it's extreme what's going on, that 94% of her own constituents supported background checks, and actually she's lining herself up with Ted Nugent and Alex Jones, Glenn Beck, that's who the people are who are extreme, and that's where her position is. So you've got Occupy and Bill Daley going after the same person. That's generally a pretty good sign that everybody hates you.
Yeah, that's a bad – there's not much left. I mean, I don't know who falls out of those parameters, right? I mean, it's almost impossible to imagine who's left after that.
If you can unite Bill Daley and Occupy, wow, right, you've accomplished something, haven't you?
All right, so let's move on. I want to pivot here now that, I mean, I think that you can't really add a too finer point to it than that, but let's pivot to the other sort of disaster coming out of the Senate, and this happened literally last night. I don't know, I'm not sure exactly what time it was, but it was late at night. There was not even a roll call for this. You had, let me just set the table here, and that there were stories, increasing stories around the country following the FAA's furloughs, which took place, I think, even less than a week ago, of flight delays, increased flight delays, which I think were sort of overblown on some level, but I think it's also a function of, you know, the media flies around a lot, and they've been waiting for this, and they were going to report on it. Now, meanwhile, we, of course, have decimated Head Start. We have cut back on NIH funding. I mean, people know there's stories about towns in California that have just been decimated by this. We are cutting back on school lunches. The list goes on and on. But it's all of those implications at first are more acutely felt by the disenfranchised, the essentially the voiceless in our country. But when, you know, you're flying to Kalamazoo or wherever it is that may have their regional airport, and all due respect to Kalamazoo, I don't know if your regional airport was shut down. But when you're flying to
Kalamazoo, man,
when you're flying to your regional airport and it's shut down, or when you've got a delay out of LaGuardia, well, wait a second. And so we hear hearings immediately take place, and within hours, the Senate last night, like I say, in the dead of the night, without a roll call, passed legislation that essentially says the FAA now has authority to transfer up to $250 million from accounts that have money into other programs. In other words, they don't have to do the across-the-board cut that's mandated by the sequester. They can shift stuff around. And the House is expected to pass this, no problem. And now the White House is expected to sign it. And this is just, I mean, this is just a stunning cave by the Democrats. I wouldn't even call it a cave. I mean it's craven.
It obviously hasn't taken effect yet because I was sitting on the runway for about an hour at Reagan, I shouldn't say that word, at National in D.C., which is why I almost didn't make it here in time. But I will say, you know, you get to the point where you kind of throw your hands up. It's kind of like their secret their secret undoing of the Stock Act.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's just no level of hypocrisy these people won't go to, and they feel like they are shielded from all of it, whether it's they're having government health care, but oh, no, you can't, to they're not having to deal with Social Security, but oh, you know, they have great big pensions, but we'll cut yours. This is just another long – they know they have to fly home, many of them, off to their districts. They know people that fly. So that becomes something important. That's something – so they want to – you know, they still want to be able to give the pain without the pain actually affecting them and the people
right.
they're friends with.
Right.
And that's really what it comes down to in the end.
Well, you know, the Stock Act is incredibly craven. This is also just sort of – I mean, where does this leave the Democrats now in terms of their pushes to repeal the sequester? I mean, because there was – it seemed to me yesterday and the day before there was growing support, albeit maybe still nascent, but growing support for simply canceling the sequester. And because of the pressure that was being brought to bear on senators, on House members – And sadly, just because more or less the biggest pressure point was these flight delays, and now that seems to be just in an instant, just simply washed away. And so the Democrats in the Senate, the Democrats in the House, if they're needed to pass this, they probably all will. The White House is basically saying we're going to take the biggest arrow in our quiver in terms of repealing the sequester, and we're going to break it in half. And now the only arrows in that quiver, it seems to me, are defense contracting, right?
That would say soon they'll do that. They'll find a way to reinstate money for the defense guys, too.
And then all that's going to be left are cuts, essentially, to the social safety net and to services that are provided to, you know, anywhere from 20 or 30% of the public to 50 or 60% of the public, but the least politically powerful. And so then it's just going to be incumbent upon upon liberals to reverse that by ushering in, you know, cuts to Social Security. I mean, that's, you know, this is what we've been talking about for an extended period of time. And then we heard, no, the sequester is going to pressure the Republicans and the Democrats equally. And then we're seeing the whole mechanism fall apart by the apologists for this policy.
It feels like this should all just be satire. Because they created this fake, stupid thing that didn't need to be done to run away from actually doing their jobs. Because everybody's going to be so scared of it that they're going to have to act. And, of course, we knew they wouldn't act, but now they're just acting on the parts that really hurt them. You're right. I mean, you take away those pressure points and the whole thing may just go on forever. None of these guys have the courage to act. It's just another one of those moments where you just shake your head and you realize, like, do these guys care what a clown show they are? I don't even know how else to sort of analyze it at this point.
Well, I mean, we know at the very least that there seems to be slowly growing fight amongst progressives in the House and perhaps in the Senate to the proposed chain CPI cuts. This week, you had the Congressional Progressive Caucus send a letter to President Obama and say, hey, you know, you seem to have met with just about everybody in Washington except for us on this whole sequester grand bargain thing. We want to sit down with you and so that you can hear how adamantly we're against the Social Security cuts. I don't know that a sit down makes any difference, but at least they're making they are willing to now really start to put some distance between themselves and the Obama administration, which I think is right. going to be necessary to for them both in their electoral opportunities in 2014 and also to protect Social Security.
Yeah, it's a shame, but that's what I mean. You know, you talk about where the incentives are. That's what it's looking like it's going to be, that you've got to put your distance between you and your own president, which is sad, and you also have to. And that's talking about – that's not talking about, like, Democrats in more conservative districts who might have had to do that because that's where they're from. We're talking about people that should be able to stand hand in hand with the president and now have to do it because of this idiocy. They have to distance themselves. And, again, that's the incentive, but the incentive also is if you care about Social Security, you're going to protect Social Security too, and that's what progressive – members you would think and it seems care about, shockingly. So that I mean that's what you see happen. I mean the whole thing has just turned into an entire mess, and it was just none of it was necessary. You know, again, it's just it's the way things go in Washington. It's what I think we need to do at any point, you know, no matter what, is make a list of things, of words that I never want to hear again. I think unless you're dealing with a jury, the words sequester, sequestration, should be just banned from the dictionary. I don't want to ever hear it again. It's kind of like gang of something in Washington.
Oh, my God.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like these guys think
literally, when
cool.
You said that, everybody in this office just went, ugh.
I know. It's like these guys think they're cool, and they come up with these terms for things. They're just the stupidest things in the world.
Well, you know, the point is that any of these gangs, what they're always trying to do is put themselves as close to the fulcrum as they can, right? I mean, think of a seesaw, folks.
Gangs,
they're the ones who want to sit
they
right.
They dress up like the right. dead rabbits and put some skin into it. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not really sure, actually. I know.
Did you ever see Gangs of New York? Come on. I guess I'm striking out here.
Oh,
okay.
No. I did see Warriors, though.
Oh, if they could be like the Warriors. What was that other group of guys in that? The Orphans, the Baseball Furies.
Right, the Baseball Furies.
If they all dress up like the Baseball Furies and allow them to do whatever they want to policy.
Now, Cliff Schechter, you lived in New York in the day of of the Warriors.
I love those late 70s movies like the Warriors and you know, like Warriors and Escape from New York and everything, where New York was just like this one bleak. You know, like just hellhole falling apart, which actually was not that far off from where New York was in the 70s, going bankrupt and, you know, that kind of stuff.
All right, let's turn briefly to the other story. I mean, obviously, we're still in the wake of the Boston Marathons in a lot of respects in terms of what the media is covering. But one thing that has really... I don't know. I mean, I think there has been some type of turning point in terms of conspiracy theory in this country, and not necessarily for the better, but there seems to be some, you know, sort of awareness now that the right, in a lot of ways, is just gone off the rails.
These guys are motivated. They know that anytime something happens. And you've got kind of – it's kind of like the NRA trying to get crazier to compete with, like, Gun Owners of America. You've kind of got, like, a fight to the end between Glenn Beck and Alex Jones. So it's like if one of them says something, the other guy has to up the insanity.
And this is not – we're not saying this – you're not saying this in a vacuum. I mean – you have Matt Drudge, who has provided, I think this past year, like 250 links. Maybe it's like 220 links to Alex Jones. And last night, you had Bill O'Reilly inviting Glenn Beck on his show. It is literally, I mean, this is...
Yeah, we mainstreamed people that used to be people that would stand on the corner with, like, you know, with a box on them or something like that and just sort of scream at the wind.
And everybody, but the thing is that now it's essentially as if you take those people and you were to put red velvet ropes around them and charge everybody walking by. Like, you want to stare at this guy, even from a distance? It's going to cost you a quarter. I mean, that's what's going on here, is that...
No, you're right. And we're in a period of time where particularly, excuse me, obviously the economy may not be as bad as it was a year or two ago, but a lot of people are suffering economically and are losing the lifestyle and even, frankly, the ability to survive they once had. And that's where I would think you'd be most susceptible to buy into. It's got to be forces greater that are out of your control that are doing this. And I just say it makes these conspiracy theories even that much more palatable. These guys know it. It's the right-wing entertainment complex. Fox News does it. I mean, they may not do it to quite as crazy a point as Glenn Beck, but then, as you pointed out, Bill O'Reilly just invites them on
right.
to talk about it.
Right.
And Alex Jones and Rush Limbaugh does some of it. And these guys are listening to millions of people, many of whom are unhinged, who are angry at the world, who have not much economic security, and it's much easier than to blame it on Republicans cutting, you know, the social safety net or training programs. It's much easier to blame it on some scary, dark force that is doing this to you. And I don't want to impugn everybody, because obviously a lot of people don't react that way, or it would be a country of completely crazy people. But enough people react that way, and enough dangerous people react that way, that it leads to things happening. It leads to people being shot and killed, and I mean, it leads to terrible things. And that's the danger of this, and they're doing this all the time. And now we've got it with this... You know, I don't know, there may be a few conspiracy theories out there, right? I think some of them think the government was involved so Obama can take your guns. That's always a popular one. The one that Glenn Beck put forth on O'Reilly is that there is a third guy there, the one that was originally reported on by the genius New York Post. What a shock that they'd have him on Fox to try to exonerate that reporting. That the Saudi national that was in the hospital was involved, and after Obama met with the Saudis, suddenly he no longer was involved. You know, I mean, you know, these are from people who support George W. Bush, whose family literally in the Carlyle Group had investments with members of the Bin Laden family. And let me be clear. I obviously am not a truther and don't believe that our government had anything to do with what happened on 9/11. But geez, if you're making up conspiracy theories, there would be a good one. With a connection that's much clearer, and yet here they come up with this insanity, and it's
weird. It's, I mean, same. you have two different sort of competing conspiracy theories here, right?
The two
Alex Jones
one.
Sure,
they'll find a half dozen more.
The Alex Jones conspiracy theory is that there were government agents all around there telling people to calm down. I don't know why government agents would be telling people just remain calm during the bombing. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not even sure I understand what the motivation would be. And of course, they're wearing, you know, their hats, which accidentally have their secret insignia.
They also believe that a lot of the victims are, well, all the victims were crisis actors. And they were even using this photo of this sergeant who lost his legs as the actor who played that now infamous picture of the guy who actually lost his legs. Like, they were actually finding, oh, this is the guy who's playing that role. Like, they were actually finding who they thought were the actors playing the roles.
So you've got that
were
conspiracy.
Were there any Israelis that got called ahead of time to skip the marathon?
Oh,
that's
bingo.
I wouldn't run today.
Sorry. Yes, we know the Israelis who have that old shtetl accent.
That kind of thing. Yeah, I expect that. I've got my own conspiracy theory, and here's how it goes. There are people out there that wanted to find a way to motivate George Bush while he was unveiling his library to read My Pet Goat again. And so they thought all you have to do is blow something up, and if something's being blown up, George Bush's immediate reaction would be to run into the stacks full of My Pet Goat in his own library, his presidential library, and grab one.
Right. That's so that everyone can get a huge YouTube payoff for him reading that again.
Now, I didn't watch the ceremony.
Did he reenact that?
Did he reenact it? He should have during when they dedicated a library. He should be like, here were the 7 minutes that made my presidency.
Yes.
He should have had Andy Card come up and whisper something in his ear, and he'd get that freaked out look on his face like, oh, my God, people actually elected me president to handle this shit. And, you know, there you go.
All right. Well, Cliff, I appreciate you doing this. I know you're exhausted. Why don't you go take a nap? And if your family will let you.
No, they won't.
No,
and there's always more work to do, Sam. I mean, we have a weekend coming up. I'll find some time to nap then. But I do appreciate your looking out for me.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us. Cliff Schechter, always a pleasure.
My pleasure, my friend. Thanks, seriously, guys, for having me on. And have a good rest of your day.
Thanks. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Isabel Gillies has just walked into the complex that we have here, both the emotional and physical. She's trying to hide her sort of shock and dismay at what our broadcast facility looks like. And she's doing a good job. She is a trained actress. And she will be joining us in just a moment right after this break. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. What a pleasure to have in studio. Wait a second. You got to bring the microphone.
I don't know what I'm doing.
What a pleasure to have in studio the wonderful Isabel Gillies, welcome to Shangri-La.
I can't even tell you. I mean, I can't tell you how excited I am.
Do you need her to speak up?
A little bit, yeah. Oh my God, I'm not even speaking up well. There. I'm so excited I can't even speak.
Now, Isabel, this is the
can't
first...
Can we do this every time?
Why is that turning on? Isabel, this is the first time you've ever been in this studio.
This is the very first time I've ever been in a radio studio.
Well, then you've never been in a radio studio. This is not what radio studios
people,
look like.
It's gorgeous in here. Let me just
honestly,
tell you.
Like, how disturbing is it for you now to see this?
It's in a very cool place, though, in the world, because there's a bonchon across the street, which you never have said.
A bonchon?
A bonchon. Do you guys not get bonchon for lunch?
I've never
day?
Had it, but I know what you're talking about.
Good Lord. It is Korean wings.
What? Where is that?
It's across the street, right next to Ben's.
It's so good that when I was on Law & Order, we shot our house in somewhere in New Jersey, and there was a bonchon there, and it was like the only one at first, and the crew would get their bonchon, and then one day I was like, what is this? And they're like, oh, it's just chicken wings. I was like, well, can I have one? And they were like, they wouldn't share.
Wow.
They would not share.
So, breaking news.
Bonchon.
No. People on that show were a-holes.
Well, no. Finally, Mark the hair guy. Oh, I got a little hot.
Yes.
It's very hot in here.
It is extremely hot in here. In fact, it's 78.6 degrees. I just realized yesterday I had some people. Actually, your old pal Michael Showalter was in studio yesterday, not actually doing the show.
No.
We were shooting some other little thing that he's doing.
Walter Showmichael?
Yes. And
I love that guy.
It was 80 degrees by the time they got in here, and I didn't realize that we actually had a thermometer in here that told us what the temperature was.
It's hot in here, and he's a funny man.
Yeah. So the guys on what are you signaling me something?
No, not
okay. So we got a bonchon on the street. I had no idea.
You have a bonchon.
Is it more
on the
than a buck? Because I won't buy.
It's not that much more than a buck. I'll tell you that, and it's delicious beyond words.
All right. Well, sold.
So there you go.
There you go. This has been all right. So now that we have, that's the upside of where we are. But let's be a little bit honest. I mean, give me your reaction. I mean,
no. To me, you know, I grow where I'm planted, Sam. And I'm into it. You know what's hard for me is being on the phone in my house and talking to you. That's hard. There's all, you know, it's the sound things, and I'm trying to go to my apartment to get the right signals, and I'm anxious, and, you know, what if one time the super called up and I didn't know what to do?
During the thing?
Yes, during the show.
Let him up.
Well, no, he knocked on the door, and I was like, no, and it was, see, I'm doing the sign of cut.
I'm on the phone. Cut.
I'm on a radio show.
So you're telling me that when you look around this place, it actually makes you feel
cool as
calm?
Anything. I feel cool. I feel included. I feel like a pro.
That is the most gracious thing anybody's ever said in this room.
Are you serious?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. By far.
No,
I have to say that I saw your wife yesterday and your beautiful child, Saul.
No.
Oh, my goodness. And Mila. I saw everybody in the playground.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm going to the studio tomorrow. And Nikki was like, ooh. I was like, hey, man. No, you guys, there's equipment around. There's sound stuff. There's like that thing. It's
to be fair, a lot of the things in here was simply put in just for the few occasions when someone comes. They're like, whoa, look at all this stuff. Half of it we don't even really use.
That's true.
Well, and also, you know, I'm a chump.
The place.
She's like, she's never been on real stuff. So, like,
who's never been on real stuff?
Well, I've never been on real radio stuff.
What are you talking about? You've been on this program.
Yeah, but on the phone.
Oh, okay. So you've never been in an actual studio.
Right.
That's what you're talking about.
Right.
Well, I can tell you, this is significantly less impressive than what a real studio
would
look
like. But it's
real.
It's real, man.
Oh, this is real. It is real. It's exactly
how it is. Very authentic experience.
Like, yeah. Gritty NYC lefty politics.
This is about as gritty as it gets, I think.
Yeah. You know, my father ran for city council, and his campaign offices were not unlike this.
Really?
Yeah.
This does have a campaign office feel.
The real deal. There's
completely fly by night. We're going to roll this thing up. Nothing is permanent here. We have spent as little as possible.
Money as possible.
That table came from my uncle who lives in Queens. That desk over there came from someone's mother-in-law.
But my wise father-in-law, who had a very successful business in the garment district, said you don't spend any money on the office.
There you go.
You know, you put your money into the gray matter, my friend.
That's right. Well, yes, you know? We're trying to pump as much money into the gray
grassroots.
Matter as possible. I don't understand that. What is? Why did you make that? You made a
Superman.
Superman is grassroots. I'm not sure I understand.
I was like, no, this was more under the radar.
So you're flying under the
under
radar.
Under the radar.
Like the grassroots.
Like a cool person.
Like a cool
in
person.
In the cool, gritty 38th Street. Yeah, Bonchon.
All right.
I don't think I've ever heard anyone call 38th Street cool and gritty.
If yeah. anyone who wants to come to New York wants to be here.
Wants to be in this studio?
Sort of.
Yes.
This is it, man.
Right.
This is living the dream.
This is grittiness,
wow.
like Midtown
yeah.
Manhattan.
I'll tell you something. Revealed.
You should spend more time with Isabel, Sam.
I was going to say,
like
revealed. Revealed. Isabel Gillies. Easy.
Easy,
easy to
date.
Impress.
I'm an easy
oh
date.
My gosh.
It's true.
Your husband's living the life, as far as I can tell.
Sort of, except that it's the auction tonight. And he'll be.
Oh, is it tonight?
A, it's tonight. B, I am one of two auctioneers.
Oh, all right. So we got the. Isabel is the auctioneer for the well, school auction.
Yes.
I bought two silent tickets, but, you know, frankly, we can't really bid on anything. And so it would be awkward to go.
You can raise your paddle for the teachers for $25.
Well,
you can show
bought,
your support.
I
you
bought,
show...
That's why I bought two silent raffle tickets.
Yeah, but you can be a body being like, yeah, PS87. And
just, we're just going to see people, you know, bid for a trip to Barbados or whatever is there. And it's just, we don't.
No, then you
happening.
Cheer them on. You go, 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 go.
We would end up spending more on a babysitter than we would actually spend at the event. So why not just, we just, that's why I bought those raffle tickets.
Have
They're
you,
expensive raffle tickets.
Yeah. Well, have you ever seen me? Oh, you bought the raffle tickets for.
Yes. $50 a pop.
Yeah, and then you get to maybe win a big trip.
Well, yeah, the chances are pretty slim. In fact, I think what we would have to do is get the class gift.
Well, that's
what happens
that's a good
is all
one.
The kids make their own. Each class makes a thing to be auctioned off, which I also think is sort of problematic here. I have to say because it's sort of awkward. Like, wait a second, all these kids participate in making something. Like they're making like some dish thing in Milo's class, and then. Only one person gets to bring it home.
Pay to play.
I don't know. I just find that like.
No, because usually, to be fair, they have the like they have the thing, and then they have replicas
reproductions
that you can.
Yeah, you
get
can't
to.
Do that with this. Maybe somebody will take a picture of it or something.
Well, I know. Well, you know, but it's a public school. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
But here's the thing: I'm going to be dressed like a Moroccan goddess.
I don't know what that is.
Okay, so the auction people come to us and they say, they came, because I was on Law & Order, so they're like, do you know anyone, we have a couple famous people in the school, and they're all on Broadway right now, and I'm busy and can't do it. They're like, I get an email, do you know anyone famous? And I was like, no, I could do it. And they were like, okay.
Wow.
Whoa. I gotta say though, being on like one of TV's most popular shows of all time is definitely more famous than whoever's on Broadway right now.
Well, no, I mean we're talking like
Richard Kind.
Richard Kind.
Oh.
Richard Kind.
Oh.
He's more famous than me. But yeah, it's not 11th Banana on the TV show is pretty good, but it's not I don't think it's I went the it's a cool mom thing. We're the two cool moms that are gonna auction.
Okay, and all right. So the well, I mean, why the Moroccan goddess thing? I don't
because
know.
It's
what
Moroccan
is a Moroccan
theme.
God?
Oh, Moon over Morocco is the theme.
Why?
I don't know because I but you know you gotta have a theme. One year it was prom.
Oh boy! I mean, I'm gonna buy the auction. I'm gonna
Just
buy
come.
The raffle tickets.
Good God!
I'm actually gonna go since it's a name drop Friday. I'm gonna go to a Jeremy Scahill book event. What do you think about that?
Woo!
Yeah.
If I knew who that was, I'd be impressed.
Well,
Who is he? I don't know who he is.
Isabel, apparently
oh,
you don't
God.
Listen to the program.
Am I going to come off as a dumbass?
Well, what? I don't
know. No, that was really funny.
Yeah, that was
great.
You really played that off well, Isabel.
What, did you write a book?
Yeah, you wrote a book.
I went to a book around? Party last night.
Well, excuse me. This is not a competition. Whose book
yes,
party
it
was? Whose book party?
Brian Stelzer's.
Give me a brush.
He did NY that book Times, on, man. Yeah, NY Times.
He did a book on the morning shows.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Well, Scahills is about drone wars. So.
Ew.
Yeah.
Stelzer's a bit more important.
Yes, and of course, Stelzer's the one who's going to make millions off it.
He's going to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Money.
You got to be very careful about putting Isabel in front of a microphone with headsets, because then all of a sudden. All right, so Isabel, let's get down to brass tacks here. All right.
Okay.
A month or so ago.
Oh yes.
There was another thing I wanted to talk to you about, and I can't remember what it was.
Neglected to play Isabel's song. Let's correct that.
Jimmy Weaver can't
see me mad. Matt has just completely dropped the ball.
I was the one setting up the camera and everything. What are you talking about?
No, not a time for retribution. It's just a time for Isabel's song.
Yeah, let's go. Come on.
Okay, deep breath.
I can't remember what it was I was going to talk. How is your book coming along, incidentally? Isabel is authoring a tweener book. Is that right?
Yes. Well, not tween. Yeah, yes. Tween, teen, YA. Mm-hmm. It's called Starry Night. It's going to be good, man.
Starry Night.
Starry Night.
You know what's really exciting, actually, is that I think that Myla is going to end up reading this book.
Yeah, well, Myla is going to be like a reader for me.
Is she's like your prime...
Well, it comes out in 2014. She's how old now?
She is 7 and a half, almost 8.
She's little. She can read. The younger sister in the book is a Food Network star. She's actually a food star. She's very famous, and she's going to be like Myla's age.
All right,
it's
so he's
fun.
Saying that she's not going to be into it? Or
no, she'll be into it. It's about love. She'll be into it. She'll be totally into it. Mm. I mean, it's...
Is it appropriate for her?
Yeah. It's a love story. It's like Romeo and Juliet.
She's a big fan of Romeo and Juliet.
She's a cutie, that girl.
Let's play the theme song.
Today
is Casual Friday. A little welcome. Isabel Gillies to the show.
She's singing along.
She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know. Listen to the picks from IsabelGillies.com.
Did you come with a thumb drive so that you could take that home? Maybe we should mail that to you. You can play that at home.
Oh, my God. Can I be a rock star?
What do you mean, are you a rock star?
Did I have a good voice?
Oh, well, yeah, no. I mean, you're a good...
Just had a duet with Jimmy Reefer Cake, practically.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, come on.
That's arriving.
Look, 95.5, get listening.
What?
PLJ.
You're just... Isabel's just, like, in front of the microphone now. She's sort of, like, free-forming. I don't know when it was.
For
those who
can't see, can you explain Isabel's Superman?
You got to back up just a little bit.
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
Can you explain Isabel's Superman motion?
I can see, and I can't explain it. for some reason, she keeps thrusting her arms forward and making a whoosh sound.
It's me being a superhero under the radar.
Okay. There you go. Does that explain things to people?
I think things have really clarified.
Now, all right. So you were on the program about a month, I guess it was a month ago. I don't know. It's
a
been a little bit hectic,
in
a little bit crazy.
The gloomy
I am
of March.
Completely lacking in sleep at this point.
That's terrible.
Wait, what was it that you told Nikki? You gave her some type of...
sage advice?
Yeah. About...
I think it might have been for Myla.
No, it was for Saul, and it had something to do with, like, you got to clear something out or do something... I can't remember what it was. Feed him. It had something to do with the feeding him or sleeping him or make sure that he was doing this for...
I'm not the biggest fan of handing out advice about babies because, you know, the thing is that my babies were a long time ago. I don't know if it's the same...
What, do you think babies have changed that much?
There's all different theory. I don't know. But you know what? We were sitting with another girl that... Lauren, she's a good mother. She might have given it. I think I said he was cute.
I can't remember what it was. All right, but... Be that as it may, I have not gotten any sleep. However, I did watch the movie that you recommended whenever that was, 4 or 5 weeks ago. I can't remember. It was Undefeated.
Undefeated.
I did not watch it with Myla, which is good because there was cuss words in it.
Right. I forgot about that.
And violence. And
I forget that Mila's seven.
I didn't watch it with Nikki because she is exhausted. She falls asleep and everything. But the movie was, I thought was great. It was about a football team. You didn't quite accurately portray what it was in terms of they had never won, not a football game, they had never won a playoff game.
Oh. Are you sure they hadn't never won a football game at all?
They had won football games, but they were so bad that they would get paid to go to expensive, like, private schools and
for their homecoming.
For their homecoming, so that the homecoming team could be assured of winning. And they used that money to fund their program because there was no funding from the public school. And some dude who just seemed to be obsessed with, you know, sort of helping these kids and building a football program there was their coach. And it was really just a fascinating and in many ways inspiring movie.
Yeah, I thought so.
Now, I got to say, Isabel, I don't think, and I know Matt is a Matthew film guy is listening, and I know how competitive he is about this, and, you know, his films
Stay strong, Matt. Stay
are
strong.
A little bit more, you know, sort of
esoteric,
snobby, pompous,
cinematic, no.
Movie douche.
But you're, what? Wow, you're going to be in for it for that. But I don't know that I've ever watched a film that you've recommended that I haven't thoroughly enjoyed. Just sort of like smart, but also sort of, you know, digestible. You know, I'm not, you know, because I don't have time. Now, these days, I can barely do anything. I'm shocked every day that I get here to do a show, to be quite frankly, at this point in my life.
I know.
I'm just shocked.
You're in the weeds, man. I saw that guy yesterday. He's cute as anything, but that's like the real deal. That's the real weeds.
And
he's
now
little,
we're trying to find an apartment.
Anything.
We can't find an apartment, and we were debating should we have moved, you know,
to
6 months ago or to the suburbs? But then how is Nikki going to work? And we need her revenue, and blah blah blah. I mean, it's not
not easy. But siblings are the way to go.
Well, what do you mean?
So you
I'm
going
right to have
thing.
Another kid?
No, you did it already.
I have to say that Mila has it has. You know, she was a much more difficult kid literally 8 weeks ago.
Right, it's, and now it's she been gets amazing. It. Now she's like, oh, right, other people in the world. Maybe I have to.
Yeah, hasn't quite been that earth-shattering. But to a certain extent, yeah, she's like, should I set the table now? Yeah, you should. I mean, there's a, you know, she's still
like,
a kid. She's still a pain in the butt, but.
No,
she's been incredibly helpful.
It's like, look at farming communities of days of past. There were like 13 of those kids.
Yes.
You know?
I don't know what that means.
Neither do I. But it means, you know what it means.
Not really. I
because
don't.
Because if you're a community, it's like more than just you. You're the only sun in the sky. You know?
Yes. Well, Mila did think that the world revolved around her because for all intents and purposes, it did. Everything we did was dictated by her, you know, because like, well, we can't go out tonight because we've got a babysitter. And of course, just when we got to that age where we were no longer dictated by her, because then we had another one.
In comes Saul.
Oh, God. All right. So
Saul's going to be like,
this is not about me complaining about having a family, although it could easily be. The point is, for a movie recommendation from you, Isabel, the last one, Undefeated, I give it 10 stars or 3 thumbs up or whatever it is that I'm supposed to do.
There you go. Okay. Well, yeah, that was a good one. I knew that was a good one. And I know this one's a good one.
All right.
Okay. So I have tweens basically now.
Right.
And the oldest is in middle school. And middle school brings a whole, which everybody knows if you have middle schoolers or if you've ever been in middle school, so maybe everybody does know, a whole myriad of different kinds of problems than sleeping and stuff like that. And so I'm going to take you back a little bit.
Okay.
About a year and a half ago, my ex-husband said it had the boys for the weekend, and he said, I'm going to take them to this movie, Bully. And I had heard about this movie. Has anybody heard about this movie?
No.
Okay.
Yes, I have.
Okay. So Bully,
I've seen
Okay, good. All right, so hold that thought. So Bully comes out in 2011, and it's about five families and with children that are mercilessly bullied. And he said, I'm going to take the boys to this movie. And I was like, no, don't. They're too young. You can't do it. It's too mean. It's going to make them cry. And I was really against it. And he said, you know what? I think it's important. And I think it's a good movie. And I'm going to take them. And he did.
And then you guys got divorced again.
We could have at that moment. I was just like on the phone crying, no, don't do it. He's like, I'm going into Lowe's. Bye.
You know what? I think I saw you that day. I mean, it's not inconceivable. I mean, let's face it. There's been more than one time where you've been on the phone crying. Were you out by the big yard, though?
No.
Okay. I didn't see.
No, but this is not like a all good with exes and all that. It's just that I was nervous about this movie because it seemed really intense for
I understand.
The little kids. So
I will tell you this. I mean, I don't mean to interrupt your flow here. I don't mean to zoom under the radar. But Nikki had a friend who made a documentary about a 7-year-old who was getting a sibling. And and I didn't know that she was going to show this to Mila. You know, Mila was very excited to have a brother. And then she saw this documentary, which was all about this 7-year-old dealing with all this anxiety about the kid. And then all of a sudden she, you know, for 3 months, she's anxious about it. And I'm like, Nikki, what did you do? Why would you show this movie to a kid? This is for adults, not the, you know.
Right. So it's not just like any parent can show, you know, step-parent can show something that the other one might be like freaked out about. Right. And truthfully, in parenting in general, you have to. Assume that the other parent is doing everything in their power to have these children be okay. Like, you have to trust that the other parent is working and living in their best interest.
Well, yeah, of course.
Right, but it's hard because sometimes they're wrong, but that's okay because then the kids can navigate their way through whatever happened that was not, you know, necessarily right. But then also if you're controlling like I am,
right?
You know, it's hard not to be like, no, do it my way. I'm better. I know more. I'm the mother. So that's what I did. And anyway, I was wrong and he was right because
did that end up affecting your settlement in any way?
No? We'd been divorced for many, many years.
I'm just curious how that
when works. This Bully movie happened. Anyway, so it comes out on Netflix. It's there to stream. I let it rip. And
this movie is not to be confused with the Larry Clark Bully. That's a completely different movie.
No, right. Yes. This is
a documentary that came out in 2011.
2011, right? Made by the Weinstein Company, and it's directed by Lee Hirsch. And it is on Netflix right now. It is such a well-made movie. It is so – I cried and cried and cried and cried. I mean, it is a killer.
Well, so wait. What are the kids – what were the kids' reaction to this?
My boys?
No, the neighbors' kids.
Yes, I mean, when they saw it, right, it was intense for them. And it, I mean, because
really,
it
connected with them? I thought maybe younger kids wouldn't really get it.
The younger one didn't really get it, and the older one did. They all got that, both of them got that. It kind of scared them. Because
I got really depressed watching it. And I saw it like this year. And yeah. I wanted to cry for some of those kids. Like, you felt so bad for some of them.
I cried for all of them, like, the entire movie.
Like, it was just horrible.
I could cry right now thinking about it. I really could.
No, for real.
She's going to cry.
I'm going to cry. I feel like I'm going
to
cry.
No, but what I mean is, like, I didn't think it would connect with younger kids. Because you have to – because I didn't look at it as, like, you know, I looked at it as an older person looking at what these poor young kids are going through. I don't know if people that age would really – them kids that age might have been like, oh, please, give me a break. Come on.
But there were kids that age in the movie.
Yeah, but you know, those people were going through it in real life. I mean, I didn't think maybe younger kids could connect with it if they weren't going through it or knew someone going through it themselves.
Yeah, except that in every school, bullying is an issue and a topic.
But what these kids were going through was...
Dude, you got to stop talking about it because she's going to have a breakdown.
No, it's true. What they were going through is... And it's all these little tiny towns in America. And it's just... It's heartbreaking. It's so good, though, because it's like it deals with sort of everything we talk about all day long, like kindness, being aware of other people. Are you okay? You know, in this society, and it kind of like weirdly bumps up against you know, the Boston thing kind of, and it's, and like all the bad stuff has been going on, I think, is a little bit of a lack of awareness of others and sort of empathy. And this movie, I think, illustrates that. And children, you know, frankly, are dying because of the lack of,
right,
of attention paid to kindness. And
well, there's been over the past humanity. Couple of years, and maybe a lot of it came sort of emanated from this movie, but there's been a lot more attention paid to this bullying dynamic, I think. You know, I mean,
I sort of think so too. And I thought it was because my kids were that age, but maybe it's just, it's getting, the light is being shined on it, because the kids in these movies, in this movie, the bullies are horrifying.
I think they covered it in the movie too. They didn't say this in the movie, but they covered this aspect in the movie. I think it's bigger now because, you know, when I was young, you'd get bullied or something, and then you'd go home, and that'd be the end of it. Kids are now going home, and it's continuing online.
Because there is no
time to get away from it, and that's when kids end up committing suicide, because they can't even escape for those few hours a day.
Right. And I think, you know, at that age, you have a certain myopia in terms of what the world is, how big it is, how big your life is, that's... For kids, that's whatever's happening at that moment is essentially an eternity,
right,
and it is their destiny. And
that's a very actually smart point, because I think there's one kid in the movie who just is just a heartbreaking character. I mean, he's a just wonderful kid
with the glasses.
Kid with the glasses.
Oh, I wanted to just give him a big hug.
Yeah, hug. Yeah. I want him to. Yeah, and his parents are so wonderful, and his family was so wonderful, and then yet people just for no reason other than maybe you look geeky or I don't know, just. I mean, picked on him is
right.
Ridiculous.
He's the one who got a lot of press after this movie came out. Like, he was on all the talk shows and everything.
Was.
Yeah.
Well, he got. I mean, people were just and also the principals and the all the adults in the school were pathetic.
Horrible people
who
I don't know how you could look at that movie and look at yourself and say I did everything that I could. Yeah.
I mean, it was eye opening. It was sort of heartbreaking, but there was hope because. Because these kids, there's one girl who was a lesbian who was ostracized.
She was cool, actually.
She was so cool.
Very good.
She's dynamic,
in herself.
Confident, smart, and like, please let me be your friend. And if you grew up in New York City, I think probably you do have like 10 of those friends.
I feel like if they didn't like put her in the movie, that movie would have been easily like 100% horrible, terrible, depressing stuff. Like she sort of was like the light in the movie
but
that made
she
you
said
feel...
in the movie, and this is really interesting, and everybody should watch this movie. I mean, it's sort of like a definitely you should watch it with your kids, without your kids. I don't really know or care. That's your sort of problem or whatever. But I'm glad my kids saw this movie. I will show this movie to them again. I'm glad I saw it. It's also beautiful. There's cool music in it.
All right. Well, I'm sold.
Yeah.
On,
that's a.
The movie is Bully. It was from 2011. It's a documentary on peer-to-peer bullying in schools across America.
Yeah.
I'm sold. I'm going to watch it.
That's a...
I'm afraid of watching it with Nikki because she's,
she's
we're both going to...
First
both...
of all, she's got hormones coursing through her blood. Like,
tell me about
I mean,
those.
My God. Honestly, the opening notes of this movie before you really even see anything is enough to, you know, you could feel your... everything coming up. I cried the entire time. Our puppy came up. Like, you know how everyone's like, oh, dogs know when you're sad, came up to me and crawled in my lap.
Well,
because it's just too much. But it doesn't matter because it just doesn't matter if you cry. Cry. Go have a good cry.
Like,
go
I definitely,
feel what
I definitely
other people
paused
feel.
The movie at a point and like yelled at the screen at like the principal going like, fucking do something, you stupid
yes,
idiot.
Right,
like,
right, right.
It's really
that's Matt's emotional.
It's a real range of reaction to this movie.
Like,
here.
I can't
like
think
it.
Of a movie that actually got such a like. I don't think I've ever seen a movie as enraging and depressing as that movie.
But it
Field
is not. It does have.
Field of Dreams.
It's depressing and enraging, but also it's these families are very close. You know, the families of the children. And then there's a hopeful, you know, the kid said, I think he said, I don't believe in luck. I believe in hope.
Well, that's very sweet. But, I mean, you know.
Because he wasn't a lucky kid, you know.
Hope for me has sort of become a little bit, I don't want to be cynical about this. Isabel.
No, don't. You'll love it.
Well, I'll watch it. Bully, 2011.
It streamed, man. Just click, you're on there.
Cannot
Netflix.
Thank you enough for coming in. But before you, you don't have to go. Actually, we got to play the Jimmy Reefer Cake song of the week. Jimmy's had a tough week, it sounds like. I'm not familiar with the song yet.
Uh-oh.
And then we'll take a couple IMs and wrap this baby up.
Do I get to stay for that?
Yeah, stay.
Oh, that's
stay.
Awesome.
All right, let's play. Let's listen to the Jimmy Reefer Cake song.
I was once a dumb kid, bought nickel bags in the hood. Now I'm a middle-aged man who thinks that reefer is good. But I gotta be afraid of who I tell. I sincerely believe legal weed will be great, but the world is what it is, so full of fear and hate. I even gotta be afraid to be myself. But I tell you this, Reefer Cake Nation keeps going on with the same old crap legalization song. You know it's true. Sometimes it's hard to be Jimmy Reefer Cake. Over half of all Americans think prohibition should end, but our elected hypocrites still seem to pretend that legal weed is gonna bring on all hell. I hear people complain that I'm glorifying weed. People also complain when the slaves were all free. So why should I be afraid to be myself? Oh, that's why Reefer Cake Nation keeps on going on. It's the same old crap legalization song. You know it's true. Sometimes it's hard to be Jimmy Reefer Cake. Yes, it's true. Sometimes it's hard to be. Sometimes it's just so, so hard to be. Jimmy Reefer Cake.
Wow, that is.
I don't know about the the slavery part.
Yeah, I think the song was well done. I think. You know, look, I certainly truck in a certain amount of self-pity, you know. I'm here complaining about Saul keeping me awake and blah, blah, blah. Marc Maron being in every single piece of periodical I pick up, it seems like. But that, I think, tops what I've done, certainly in terms of... But, you know, I mean, Jimmy's got a point. But hang in there, Jimmy.
I hate pot.
What?
I hate pot.
That's not
why. Oh, is your her mic on?
Her mic's on. Yeah.
Okay.
She's
why do you hate pot?
Well, I just don't like it.
You just oh boy.
Don't like it. I'm not saying it shouldn't be legalized. I just don't like it.
Can
myself,
I just
personally.
Say though? I mean, some people do say that a lot of smoking weed leads to depression. That's a possible side effect.
Mm.
So maybe that's Jimmy. Honestly, sometimes we got to take the break from the things we love. Maybe give it a couple days, chill out a little bit.
I think hang in there, Jimmy. That's all I want to say. And
your voice sounds pretty.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the IMs. We don't have much time. Cliff quotes Stephen Colbert, but that says Barbara Babbitt, but that was John Oliver on The Daily Show. It's in an installment one of his gun series that I recommended to you on Wednesday. Thank you, Barbara. Hopefeld, oh my God. Hopefeld, that is a huge... That's quite big.
That's a long one.
That's a long one. Wednesday night, Lawrence O'Donnell bashed Reinhart and Rogoff. Austerity working paper for excluding Canada from studying the effects of sovereign debt at the 90% threshold. O'Donnell points out that Canada is our largest trading partner. Canada is the country closest to us. Many parts Canada. All right. Well, there's a lot of stuff about Canada here. I'm not sure what the point is, but we mentioned that with when we spoke to Mike Consigal last week. Harmony Rockets. Sam, a little over a week before the Boston Marathon bombing, a non-Muslim man brought two live IEDs onto a train in New Jersey, and it wasn't even reported by the media. Wow. Yet the Times Square and underwear bombing attempts were huge news events. No wonder why so many people... That's interesting. I will look into that.
Hmm.
Weird. R. Cheese. Background checks. What if we took a page from the Fox playbook and framed the dissenting senators and reps in Congress as arming NAMBLA? Matt and Michael can do O'Reilly-style ambush interviews as to why they're so dedicated to arming child rapists. I say all of this in jest, of course, but I seriously believe we would be much tougher and with a much sharper edge. Love the show. Have a great weekend. Well, I see what Archie's is saying here, is that I get what the point is. And, you know, I think what Cliff and these other activist groups are doing in terms of making NRA money toxic and making people who calculate their bottom line based upon profits, making them calculate that the cost of doing business with the NRA is too high. It is not worth the money that they're getting. I mean, that seems to be the calculation and the attempt, and that makes a lot of sense. Lawyer Matthew, still need to plan a night with Isabel and Peter upstate. Did you know that Lawyer Matthew, I think, went to school with Peter? On second thought, based on Isabel's pot position, maybe not. Woo.
I don't like pot.
Well, somebody's
I'll just
get,
say it again.
There you go.
Not a pothead.
Bush and Chains, finally, been so busy. Matt Taibbi, the Illuminati were amateurs. The second huge financial scandal of the year reveals the real international conspiracy. There's no price the big banks can't fix. Well, you know, now, Bush and Chains, this is exactly my point about the problem with the Illuminati conspiracy theories. I don't think that's the point you were trying to make, and I'm not saying this in contradiction to you, but when you start talking about the Illuminati, these stories become boring. They're nuanced. You can't say that they're sitting in a room. But that's the point, is that you don't need an Illuminati. Because they're doing this out in the open. We'll have Taibbi on next week. There's a lot of stories I want to talk to him about. Morella 622. Hey, Sam, after Isabel's Gillies breaking the news about the Korean food shop, you'll have to update your intro into the shadow of the New York Times to include the new info. Add to the $1 lunch district of New York City. Well, maybe they have a $1, like, bet you can buy one wing for a buck or something.
Don't know.
You don't know.
Don't know about that.
Well, there they go. Jibutrist, Jimmy Reefer Cake, great as always. Moishi Moishi. Could Isabel and the George Bush doll fly off to end the show? Oh, that's an interesting.
Interesting.
He is up. He's been thrown into the corner, the George Bush doll. But maybe we can do that. And the final I am of the day and the week, folks. Triangle Bill. Hi, Sam, Matt, Michael. Happy Friday. Isabel, have you seen the movie Beasts of the Southern Wild? If so, what did you think of it? Have a great weekend.
So interesting. I have it. I have the movie, and I have not watched it, but I want to.
Oh,
and I want to watch it with the kids. So thank you. And that's a good reminder to watch it. And perhaps I'll tee it up this weekend.
All right. We've got two more IMs. Jimmy Reefercake's company had a 90s Jewel vibe to it, I think. Great show.
Oh,
thanks,
did.
Isabel.
That's true.
And now the final IM of the day, 1001. Will Isabel Gillies be a regular in-studio guest on Friday from now on? If not, I will send our shadow masters of the Invisible Empire to sacrifice you to the reptilian race that lives underground and controls our government. See you next week. Isabel, thank you so much. What a pleasure.
Thank
we
you.
Need to do this again.
I would love to do it again.
It was wonderful to see you.
It's an
in
honor.
Person. This is really this really is your context.
Good times, man. Good times on 38th Street.
All right, folks. See you on Monday. We'll have David Dayan to talk about some of the heinous things Treasury is up to. Have a great weekend.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice was made.
for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. The months shifted into years, while I shifted in and out of gear, waiting.